Welcome to episode 26 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And we will be covering on this, well, afternoon. so we usually say tonight or something. But anyway, season 2, episode 1, which is titled Brother. But before we get to that, we have some feedback from the previous episode. So we're going to start with that. So we're going to open hailing frequencies. All right, so I guess I will start with the first bit of feedback, and that's from James Robbins. Hi, James. He says, hey, guys, just getting around to listening to your Escape Artist episode. Brian, you pronounced Reveille correctly. And to that, I have to say, something new I have. He says, Reveille, Reveille, all hands heave out and trice up. That's the announcement we'd have to start the day. Means get out of your racks, bunks, and get ready for the day. With concern with what to call midnight, it's simply called zero or 0:00. Why didn't we think of that?
I don't know. I feel so dumb now. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course.
I do too.
Zero dark 30.
Yeah, I know. It's funny.
Oh, gosh.
He says, in the Navy, we don't say O because O is not a number. I really feel dumb right now. There's, of course, various other slang, zero dark 100 and such. We also playfully call it balls because of the shape of 0000 on a log entry for balls. Yes, a sailor's mind is always in the gutter. Mike brought up a great example of different ships running different schedules. His ship had a short mid-watch, balls to four. I was only ever on one ship due to my career being cut short and being medically retired. Ours was 2200 to 0300, and our rev watch, Reveille, was 0300 to 0700. I also forgot to mention in my previous feedback on this episode with Mike McMahon writing, the ending was a delightful callback to the Rick and Morty Mr. Messix episode for those of us that are also Rick and Morty fans. I don't think we've ever talked about it, but do you watch Rick and Morty?
No.
I started watching it on Hulu, but I have to get back to it. I think I got through the first 8 episodes. Started watching it, I think, in November. But I like it. Oh, another fun little tidbit I keep meaning to relay to you guys. My rate or job in the Navy was a gas turbine systems mechanic, and the acronym is GSM for the rate. Like Golden Spiral Media.
That's cool.
All right. Want to read the next one?
Sure. Todd says, there's nothing in the credits or on IMDb, but tell me if this seems way off. The alien girl who forgot where she parked, I strongly believe it is Melissa Rauch, Bernadette from The Big Bang Theory. Watch it again, and I dare you to try and come up with anyone else it could be. Well, I did not think it was Bernadette, but I didn't know who else it could be.
Well, to that, unfortunately, I have to give you Todd. It was in the credits, actually, and it was, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but I'll try. Barbara Mamabolo played that character. So,
Mabolo?
Maybe.
Who knows?
Mamabolo. So, Ken from Chicago on Twitter, he responded. Actually, he was responding to our last episode, the roundtable. And he says, to, and this was addressed after you dropped off, but he says, to Martin's question, yes, I do have many objections to the contradictions in tech and canon, repeating what hashtag Enterprise did and needlessly done. Zero parts of the series required this to be a prequel. The series could have been set a century after TNG, DS9, Voyager, easily. And I just wanted to address this because we may have some new listeners to the podcast, but I think we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, and I've talked about it when I've guested on other podcasts as well. And the way I look at it, as much as I love this show, and that's a lot at this point, very much so, over the break between seasons, I rewatched it 8 times. So, I mean, yeah, I'm a little crazy. But I will say that if I were the creator, showrunner, I would have made different decisions than were made here. And I think that they could have, like, you have the predecessor of the Kelvin timeline, which had updated things. And yes, you can argue that the Kelvin timeline takes care of some of that. But the way I look at it, in order to have the legacy of Star Trek, in order for it to be a continuing franchise and not something that, like, you know, is something you watch in reruns for the next, you know, 200 years or however long we, until we stop watching video, it needs to evolve. And I think that it's okay for there to be some technology and even costuming and set differences between what the original series did and what this show is, even with the fact that it's, you know, supposedly at the start 10 years prior. I think now it's like either 9 or 8 prior, but I just think that it's people that grew up on TOS that I think object the most to this issue. And I have to say that if you have kids or grandkids and you want them to enjoy Star Trek and you want them to pass it on to their kids and grandkids, the technology needs to evolve. Where things need to stay put is in the canon, is in the story canon. Now, that said, I think that, like I said, there were decisions made in the show. You don't need to make things look different, like ships and that. I think they could have made the ships look more 23rd century, you know, at least in the outer design. I think that they could have also not touched the Klingons at all, but we've talked about that exhaustingly. So, you know, that's where I stand. I think if you want the franchise to be around, you need to be okay with that. So things need to be somewhat fluid as far as technology. You had something to say as well?
I do. I see your point, Brian, but I think they still screwed up royally by not setting this series in the future instead of setting it in the past. They're making the same mistakes that they did with Enterprise, frankly. I have to agree with Ken from Chicago here, although I don't really know what the question was. He makes the points that I always, always will think of every single time I watch this show. Yes, I like it. Yes, I enjoy it. I like what they're doing and all that kind of stuff. But there's still, even with this episode, there's still that little niggling in the back of my head that is thinking about the, you know, the Star Trek Bible, the canon, the stuff that they're screwing up with. I don't really have a problem with the fiddling with the technology and all that kind of stuff. Whatever. No one wants to watch a show that looks like it was set in the 60s. But they could have solved all of that by just making it further in the future. I mean, the future is unknown. The past is set.
Well, to that, I will say that that's 100% correct. I don't quibble that. What I am saying, though, is if you're going to set something in the past, then, you know, like, I'm mostly okay with where things are now. There are still some things that pop up into my head as well. But, you know, I would rather enjoy the show for what it is. And as long as they don't screw up the story canon, and what I said this last week, what Kurtzman needs to say in an interview somewhere is we have updated the visual look and feel of the show. And people will, if you state that, like, it's obvious at this point, but if you state that, people will eventually get on board with it. That's all they need to do at this point. Yes, Ruthie, I agree. Put this show in the 25th century and all those problems go away. And
melt away like they were nothing.
Yeah.
Because they would be nothing. I'm sure for the life of this series, it will continue to frustrate me. And there is quite frankly nothing I can do about that because it just frustrates me that they did not have the foresight to do that. I don't understand why they thought this was a good idea. Yes, I'm enjoying it. Yes, I like it. Blah, blah, blah. However, as I said, there's still in the back of my head that little niggling sensation of always, I feel like I can't relax and watch the show because I'm always on my guard for, are they going to screw something up? You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Because when I'm watching The Next Generation, I don't have that worry because it's a continuation. It takes place in the future from when the original characters were there. So we don't have to worry about them screwing anything up. This is the case with any kind of prequel that you make. You are always a little bit on your guard for what are they going to do? How are they going to screw things up? Blah, blah, blah. Depending on, of course, how much you know about the history, basically, of the show. When they made the Star Trek First Contact, we had heard about the story about when the Vulcans came down, blah, 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 and they told that story. It didn't really contradict with anything because we didn't really have specific facts for them to rewrite. We just knew that this happened, and here it is. So that, to me, is a good way to do that kind of a story. I mean, it wasn't really even a prequel. It was just a, hey, this is a story from the past, you know? And that's the real issue, I think, is trying to do a prequel versus trying to do a story from the past.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I can see that point. All right. Anyway,
that's what bothers me sometimes.
Yeah. Season 2, episode 1, which is titled Brother, written by Ted Sullivan and the former showrunners, and I think they were showrunners at the time that this was shot, Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts. And it's directed by the new showrunner and basically the chairman of the board, leader of the franchise, whatever you want to call him. Love him or leave him.
Supreme leader.
Alex Kurtzman. And the description that I get from CBS.com says, season premiere. After answering a distress signal from the USS Enterprise, the USS Discovery welcomes aboard Captain Christopher Pike, Anson Mount, and begins a new mission to investigate the meaning behind 7 mysterious red signals. Michael Burnham grapples with her past, growing up on Vulcan with her foster parents and brother Spock. And it is TV-14 with language and violence. So, and in case you didn't get it, it debuted on January 17th, which is the 17th of January, hence 1701. So, all right, Ruthie, what did you think of the episode?
I enjoyed it for the most part.
Do you have a rating?
I'm going to arbitrarily assign this a 9.
Okay. Well,
all of my ratings will be arbitrary, but just so you know. So don't expect any rhyme or reason or any sense to come from any of them, because that's not how I roll. I just can't do that. I cannot in my head make it be like, well, this one was better worth than that one. So numerically, I must. No, can't do that. I can't keep track. I can't watch the series 8 times. In the break. I just can't. Got stuff to do.
Well, I'm touched. In more than one way. All right. Well, I am going to give this... I will say it's not a perfect episode. And I definitely do notice some things that you know, I had to raise my Vulcan eyebrow on. But I'm going to give this a 9.5, and it's 9.5 red things. I was expecting a red thing. So I really, really liked Anson Mount's Christopher Pike. I think he's going to be a great captain to be following this season. He's different than Kirk, definitely different than Picard, but he's very collaborative like Picard is. So, you know, I think he's a little more familial than Picard is. I get that impression that he will befriend. So
not quite so formal.
Yeah. All right, so we have some listener ratings as well. You want to start?
All righty. Steve says 9 out of 10, scariest environment imaginable. He sets an Armageddon reference.
Rick from Cleveland, my former home, he says, what an episode. I rate this 10 asteroids in the shuttle bay out of 10.
Okay, Clint says, wow, what a premiere. I give it 10. Blue shirts are the new red shorts. You can see where they blew the budget on this and the next few episodes. Give me more.
Yeah, you can see how much was spent, particularly on this episode. And we know that part of the reason why Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts lost their positions was because of budget. They went way over on the first three episodes, which is good for us viewers, at least. And we can see from this episode, holy cow. I mean, it looked like a movie. It looked like it could have been Star Trek IV, you know, just in terms of the quality of the visuals. Although that also might mean that the final 11 episodes are, you know, bottle episodes. We'll see. Wes Huntington, friend of the show and roundtable member, I give this episode a 10 out of 10 easily.
All right. James says, I was thinking 8.5 drunk on power Tillys, but she made me change it to 9 drunk on power Tillys, because otherwise she was going to put me in a supply closet being so drunk on power. It would have had a 10, but I wanted more, more, more. I'm selfish.
Yeah, and we got a couple of other ratings as well that will be in the voicemails, so we'll play them later. But I wanted to mention that I posted something about this on the Facebook group, how tired I am, how annoyed I am with the trolls out there, the haters. Because to me, this is not a 40%. And on Rotten Tomatoes, right now, at least as of 5 p.m. Eastern time, the show had a 40% member viewer rating. I believe it got in critics, it got a 92%. it kills me. I think those that are so against it really need to get over themselves. So,
yeah.
All right. So let's move on to the yeses.
Yes.
All right. First, we've got several yeses from James Robbins. He starts off with brief cameos of the Enterprise. I think if it got too much screen time, it would have been distracting. They gave it just enough screen time. Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. If it had gotten more, people would be saying that this is like the Enterprise, not Star Trek Discovery. It would be Star Trek Enterprise 2.
Yeah.
So anyway, I agree. I like this too. He says, roll call on the bridge crew. I think they've listened to us from season one. They've started to bring out the crew a little more from the background. I feel like this is a little foreshadowing of further development on these guys. Yeah, I would agree. I definitely heard more coming from like Detmer and Irium off the bridge, Irium, which I have some news about Irium actually. Owashikan, and what's the other guy's name? Reese and Bryce. They all seem to have more dialogue this episode, which is good. Lorca's foreboding fortune homage to the cage and the menagerie. Yeah, did you catch that?
You mean the fortune cookie fortune?
Yeah.
Not every cage is a prison or whatever thing.
Yeah, it says, not every cage is a prison, nor every loss eternal. The first line is very cage, and the second is very menagerie. Add the to both references.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. He continues, the 60s-style honeycomb screens in Spock's quarters. Awesome tie into TOS while modernizing the look. Pike establishing himself without emulating a Kirk or Picard archetype. He showed a lot of personality. Seeing him with a sense of humor with Tilly during the handprint scene sets him apart from Picard's all serious all the time mentality. While giving the bridge back to Saru when he felt the ship was no longer on mission shows much less ego than a Kirk type, i.e. demoting Decker and being insensitive to him afterwards in the motion picture. Yeah, I would agree with all of that. Those are great things about Pike specifically. Definitely less ego because he had to have the Enterprise back. And yeah, he was really dismissive of Decker in the motion picture. And I already talked about him being more like joking on the bridge. That's not something we used to see Picard do. Unless he was calling Barkley broccoli.
Oh, goodness.
And his last point, Connolly bites it. Man, that guy was a dick. Wasn't he, though?
Oh, man. I had that, too. I wrote, I didn't write down the exact quote that Connolly said, but I wrote down, don't question me. I know what I'm. Kaboom!
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I saw it coming, but it was still awesome!
And that's it for James. So thanks for all those yeses. And that was great. All right, next.
All right, Fred from the Netherlands says, Commander Nand survives her red shirt even when called a red shirt by Pike.
Yep.
I guess.
I thought that was. And
blue shirts are the new red shirts.
That was paraphrasing, by the way. Fred didn't specifically say that, but based on the he had posted some images in the comments. So that's she gets literally called a red shirt, but if anyone was acting like a red shirt, it was Connolly. I mean, he was racist or at least dismissive like a red shirt would be. I thought it was brilliant of them kind of twisting around the sensibilities, you know, like we're expecting that red shirt to die and she doesn't die. All right. Ruthie, what yeses do you have?
Just the Connolly one.
Well,
except for I said he was douchey.
Well, he was. And he actually mentioned, I think it's the, I didn't write it down, but it's the race from the animated series that Emress was. That he mentions that specifically, that that was the roommate that he had in the academy. It was, I want to say Corinthian, but I don't think that's right. I'll probably insert the actual thing here.
What are you talking about?
Connolly, just before he died, he mentioned someone in the academy, some roommate in the academy that
was a year ahead of him.
Yeah, was a year ahead of him. And that was of the species that Emress was Acacian. Yeah, so the cat, Acacian was a that cat-like species that we see in the animated series. That's what it was.
I've never seen the animated series.
Ah, it's actually really good for early 70s animated, but it is really good. That was my first Star Trek, actually. All right. So other things I would say, as far as my yeses, the tone of the series or the episode was, I thought, quite a bit different than, you know, the dark tones that we got from the last season. We see that image of Kober that Stamets is playing. I like that he's kind of finally mourning the loss of Kober, but I am really curious, knowing that Wilson Cruz is in the credits, how we're going to see him throughout the season. Like, does he come back to life, or is he just someone that is just referenced through memories and things like that? I don't know. What, do you have any thoughts about that? We didn't even talk about Kober in the roundtable.
I mean, what do you mean?
How Kober is a main character this season, like on the main credits of the show. So we're obviously going to be seeing a lot of Wilson Cruz this season, and I'm still trying to figure out how.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't really know why they would do that for a character who's deceased, unless they have a whole bunch of flashbacks planned. And having a whole bunch of flashbacks planned does not make any sense.
No, it doesn't. So, you know, we'll have to see. But, I mean, there are a lot of things that are kind of like foreshadowed, like the Burnham Spock relationship and how that's going to play out. And also, certainly, I think Tilly's going to have an arc this season because, well, we'll get into this in a minute, but Tilly was very Tilly.
She was Tilly as usual.
Yeah, just in general, I thought the visuals were just incredible. They were movie quality. And I just really wonder, like, how much did they spend on this episode? Because it just looks absolutely stunningly beautiful. And haters of the show, you can't take that away. You might not like what they've done with the series, but it's visually striking. All right. I'm going to move on to the nose.
No!
You want to read James's nose since I did his yeses?
Let's see. James says, no Enterprise bridge shots. We are going to get to see this eventually and was hoping we'd see it in the premiere. I'm so anxious to see the reimagining.
Me too. I would definitely say I am very curious to see where they're going to go with this. And I think that I said in the roundtable, they have to show the Enterprise bridge. I think if they don't show it, it's going to be funny. Now, whether or not, like, what's hinted at, and I think we're going to end up seeing this, is that essentially the Enterprise is going to get an unknown, I'll call it that, an unknown refit, a refit that we didn't know about, that I think at the end of the season, we're going to see an Enterprise that looks a lot more like the Enterprise that we're used to. That's my prediction anyway, and maybe we'll see it then. But I expect to see it at some point. So,
alrighty then. He says, I wanted more. I think they could have gotten away with making the premiere 2 hours and furthering the storylines a bit. It was great on its own, but I'm selfish and I want more. LOL.
Well, I'm not going to quibble with it not being long enough. James, I'd say it, but I think you're greedy, man. I mean, it was the longest episode to date. Wes is going to bring this up in the feedback, but it's certainly the longest episode of Discovery by far. So, yes, we could have had more, but I think we're going to get a lot more to come. So, all right. And to that, I also put down that in my nose that I'd hope to see the bridge more or in this episode, but they must be saving it for later. Do you have anything, Noah, that you want to bring up?
I do, actually.
All right.
But when they were doing the whole being in transporter range and they got the proximity alert, like, it seemed like it took a little bit too long to, oh crap, we don't have our shields up. Like, really?
Yeah.
You're in an asteroid field. Why didn't you do something like, I don't know, try and vaporize the pieces that come at you instead of trying to bob and weave? I mean, what? This didn't make any sense.
Or put them in a tractor beam?
Yeah, or something. Some kind of other than, oh crap, let's dodge out of the way a little bit too late and then get scraped up. And oh my God, I didn't see that coming. Really? You didn't see that coming?
And to that, that's probably worth mentioning the that Saru comment. It's like, really? What is Ganglia pop up? Yeah. That was funny.
I know. I thought that was funny. Like, you didn't expect that? No, I did. But yeah. That was my thing about the whole, like, will we have our shields down? It just seemed a little, I don't know. I was like, shouldn't you have been expecting something like that? I mean, considering the fact that you know you're in a mind field, I don't know. Anyway.
The other thing I wanted to bring up in the nose was, it was a little too much Tilly. Tilly was a little too Tilly this episode. She was really nervous and really, like, acting like she did as a cadet, like, in the first episode that we see her in, Context is for Kings. I think they could have done with a little less of that this episode. I think people like her turning into the captain that she will become. And I just thought, although I enjoyed it, I thought it was a little bit too much. What do you think about that?
Well, I disagree.
Good.
I thought she was fine. I thought she was only thrown off her game because of Captain Pike.
Yeah.
Apparently he's some kind of rock star or something. So she was.
Well, when Saru was looking up, you know, what captains to emulate, he was one of the five.
Yeah. So to me, it more felt like she was meeting a famous person, and it was that kind of nervous. Not really like, I don't know what I'm doing nervous. It was like, I'm meeting a famous person and I'm really nervous.
Well, she definitely was nervous enough to put up his F in astrophysics.
Oh,
but man. I love that Pike just owned that, you know, he wasn't trying to hide or anything. Didn't try to make him seem
like a person. He's very comfortable with himself, so it doesn't really matter if anybody sees his past failures because he's successful now. So what does it matter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, I like that he got an F in astrophysics because that makes him A, he's not perfect, and B, that makes him a better captain, I think, because he needs to rely on his skilled crew members to help with those things. You know, maybe that's why he calls them red things.
That's funny. Yeah. I think it kind of also sort of, to a certain extent, I don't know if humanizes him is necessarily the right word when you're talking about multiple different races and species and all that kind of stuff. But I guess maybe more relatable.
Yeah.
Like, he's not perfect. And maybe a little bit more relatable to his crew. I think Tilly kind of relaxed a little bit after that, especially with the joke. That was hilarious.
Which joke?
Oh, my pinky!
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she's like, oh, my gosh! He's like, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Oh,
that was funny.
Anyway, his introduction... you know, the roll call I thought was great. We talked about that before, but there was one other thing that I was going to bring up. It's a minor thing, but I thought that the start of the cold open with the NASA Cassini footage didn't seem to go anywhere, and it was a little disorienting, I thought. I don't really know why they put that in there. I don't really feel like it added much. And for that matter, considering the Cassini went up in the, I think it was 97, it wouldn't be on film reel footage. So the use of the film reel was disingenuous. Should have been on looked video-ish, not old film footage. So, all right. So, speaking of Tilly.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
Always my favorite. So, all right. We got one from James. You want to read that?
All right. James says, did that sick alien in the turbo lift not have any manners? I mean, sure, it was Connolly and he deserved it. But let's not spread disease, people. Just being tongue-in-cheek here. I really didn't have any hold your horses for this episode. I mean, I have to agree a little bit. I mean, come on. Who just thinks it's okay to sneeze on another person?
It felt very Orville-ish.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So, like, the other places where there was humor, and let's face it, I think putting humor in this is a good thing, but I think that it was a little more forced than it needed to be in that case.
Yeah,
I think they could have gotten away without that sneezing thing.
Yeah, just the being sick thing was enough.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, when she was talking to him and he, whatever, and she said it was going around. I agree. Humor is always a good thing, but it has to be tonally appropriate humor.
Yeah.
Or the right type of humor for the show. Like, you can't just throw, I mean, you know, there are different types of humor, right?
Right.
And some types of humor fit certain types of shows, and other humor does not fit in those shows. That's the reason why they have it that way. I don't know. I'm always a fan of funny. I like to laugh, so.
Yeah. Do you have any hold your horses?
I do not.
I had one, and this isn't a bad hold your horses. This is a good hold your horses, or like, whoa, did they do that? And that was the registry of the USS Hiawatha was NCC 815. And I'm wondering if that was a lost reference to Oceanic Airlines Flight 815.
Of course, anytime you have an 815 together, it's going to be a lost reference.
It certainly seemed that way. I was trying to figure out if Alex Kurtzman ever worked on Lost. I didn't go back to look at his IMDb, but like I know he was a part of the Bad Robot Machine, so he might have been. I know he was on Alias, so he very well could have been. Probably was.
Well, I don't know that. I don't know. I don't feel like they, like Bad Robot, did all of Lost. I think that they just did, or I should say, oh gosh, what's his name?
J.J. Abrams?
Yes, that guy. I don't think J.J. Abrams did anything but like the first episode.
Well, yes, but he was
the show.
He was an executive producer. It was his show. Like,
yeah, but an executive producer doesn't necessarily mean you're involved in the day-to-day everything. I mean, Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, I think, were the main show people in that show. I mean, I don't know that that's 100% true. I just heard that he wasn't, that J.J. Abrams was not as involved as those two were. Even though, I mean, he might have been an executive producer on it, but that doesn't necessarily mean you were, like, had your hands deep in the show. That could have been I threw money at it.
Yeah. Okay, so as far as I just looked him up on IMDb, and no, I did not find Lost in his list of credits. So he was definitely on the Alias crew as co-executive producer and co-executive and supervising producer. So he was involved with that for quite a while, but he was not involved. So, but anyway, I thought it was interesting. There probably is someone on the crew that has a Lost in their resume, but I just don't know who.
Or maybe they were just fans.
Sure.
All right, cool.
The other thing, I didn't realize that I put this, but Little Spock was a bit of a jerk. And I'm using a less colorful metaphor there. But.
He didn't seem very receptive to having a new member of the family. Anyway.
And he, also seem to convey emotion, because to me, that is not a logical way to act.
He didn't really, I mean, if according to the Kelvin series shows, he didn't necessarily have his emotions under control when he was a kid. So
that's true.
Seems to logically follow. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's something that they're going to explore, though, more in this season. Why he didn't really seem to want Michael around.
Yeah, so they definitely will be.
I'm kind of curious. I mean, why do you think?
I don't know. And I don't know why she says later that he definitely had empathy. So, I mean, what does that mean? And she says that it was her fault. So, like, what did she do? That's what I don't know. I'm very curious, but I have really, there's no room for speculation in my head on it. I have tried to think about what's going on, but I really have come up with nothing.
Yeah. I kind of think that, I think the memories of children are not necessarily accurate.
Yeah.
They tend to interpret things differently from how they maybe should be interpreted, as in something happens and a child thinks that it's their fault, but it's not really something that's necessarily your fault in the way that you can assign blame, I guess.
Yeah.
Like Amanda seems to spend a lot of time with her in the flashbacks of this episode. So maybe child Michael is perceiving that as her taking his mother away, and so child Michael thinks that it's her fault, and that feeling stays with child Michael until child Michael becomes an adult and still doesn't have the perspective to look, or ability maybe to be able to look back and say, oh no, that wasn't really my fault. I couldn't help how she acted, how his mother acted. It wasn't inappropriate for his mother to mother her as well.
You know, yeah.
That kind of a thing. So I kind of feel like maybe it's probably something like that. Maybe. I don't know.
All right. Well.
But I guess we'll see.
I had something to say about little Spock that is still not coming to me. So we are going to instead go and open hailing frequencies. And now we will start with voicemail. So we actually got 3 voicemails this episode. That's great.
Woohoo!
So the first one is from Steve Brown.
Hey, Brian and Ruthie, it's Steve. And I have only had a chance to watch the episode once because I've got a busy day ahead of me that I won't be able to watch it for a second time before you guys need your feedback. I sent in my rating to the Facebook group, and when they were describing the atmosphere on the asteroid, it reminded me so much of Armageddon, and where Owen Wilson says, okay, scariest environment imaginable. That's all you had to say was scariest environment imaginable. I love the episode. It did bring some questions to my mind that will probably be answered upon a second viewing. But the plot was a little convoluted to me, that these signals they've got, and then at the end talking about the Red Angel and Burnham seeing, when she was saving the captain, she sees what looks like a Red Angel, and then it turns into the person in their spacesuit. And it just, so it opened up a lot of questions for me. Did Pike say that they on the Enterprise had the new uniforms? Because that's what it sounded like he said. But then at the end of the episode, he changed into one of the Discovery uniforms instead of Discovery changing into the quote, new uniforms. And, you know, with the replicators, you'd think that if this is the new uniform, I mean, I know back in my day, it took a long time for new uniforms to fully transition into an entire service. But if you have a ship of, 200 or 300 people, or however many people are on Discovery, you'd think they could outfit them with the new uniforms. And so that confused me a little bit. But it didn't detract from the episode at all. and loved seeing Tig Notaro, and can't wait to see what she does going forward. So I can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
All right, Steve, thank you so much. And it's been a longstanding tradition with Steve, at least lately, in terms of our my other podcast, The Walking Dead Talk Through. He's been a prolific feedback giver. So, as usual, Steve, I have to give you the Showcase Award. Thank you so much. Could be the short one there.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about watching the episode more than once, because I'm probably not going to be able to watch it multiple times either.
Yeah, it's with the being on Friday. It's going to be difficult to watch it, especially like this one, which was over an hour. I did get in three watches, but the third watch was because we had to extend the deadline. Otherwise it would have only got in two, but,
so yeah, don't worry about that.
Yeah. Just do your best. And for that matter, I want to encourage people that if, you come up with something you want to say about the episode, and we've already, recorded and or dropped the episode for that week, go ahead and submit feedback. We'll read it anyway, as we did the feedback that we got, in between episodes just now. So,
yeah. And you never know, we might have to suddenly extend the deadline for whatever reason. So it might get in there anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
and yeah, Mike did say the Enterprise had the new uniforms. He said all the what's her face Nan said, I guess we know where the Federation spent all their pennies. And Pike said something about, yeah, but we got the new uniforms.
Yeah, he said, don't covet thy neighbor's starship or something like that. Funny. Now, I'm thinking that the new uniforms go with the ships. So, like, yeah. Pike would change uniforms because he's now stationed with the Discovery. And for whatever reason, they haven't gotten the new uniforms yet. They've got the new technology, but because it's a newer starship for sure. But they haven't gotten the new uniforms. So I'm wondering if at the end of the season, they will get the new uniforms.
Yeah. I don't think it necessarily makes very much sense for them to not all have new uniforms, though. Like Steve said, with the replicators and all that stuff, it should be pretty simple to say, hey, make this instead.
Well, especially when we see Burnham get her uniform through a replicator or whatever you want to call it.
Right. So, exactly.
So, yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those things, though, like all of these decisions that were made, I hate to say, but Brian Fuller, I'm looking at you, because it's everything I've heard, all the things that I don't agree with came from Fuller. So, and yeah. I'm saying that based on my impressions. I could be wrong, but everything I've read, like, that's what it'll say. Like, I read it looking at the books that come with the Eagle Moss stuff, and they explain why the ship was designed the way that it was. Fuller said they can't have round the cells. I mean, I rest my case. So, all right. Well, next we are going to go into, I think Mark has given us feedback for, I think, every episode we've done. There may have been one somewhere where he didn't give us feedback, but he's definitely on a streak. So Mark Decote, you're up next with your feedback.
Hey guys, Mark from Ontario, Canada here, and I am so happy to have this season back. Sure, the short treks were fun, but man, it's nice to have a full episode of Star Trek back on TV. My rating for this one, I give this episode 10 beautiful nail beds. And there is the budget they told us about. This felt like a full-fledged movie. I hate the fact that we know that the budget after episode 3 is going to be much lower, so we're not going to be able to expect scenes or episodes like this anymore, which is a little bit of a bummer. But man, this one was good. Now, I thought we were getting a new intro when that whole Girl Who Made the Stars montage started. I thought, oh, wow, they changed the intro this season, which I know they actually did, but it was still similar to last season's. But that whole Girl That Made the Star thing, I thought was a new intro, at least until Burnham started talking and narrating it. Now, I know we're going to get some payback for that later on or throughout the season, but for now, I have no idea what any of that actually meant. It was pretty cool to see Pike and Connolly and Non show up, and even Pike made a comment to Non in her red suit, which I knew as soon as Pike made a comment to her, get your red suit to engineering or something like that, I knew she was going to live. There was no way they were going to do the stereotypical red shirt is going to die. And I knew at that point, too, that Connolly wouldn't make it. So I wasn't really surprised. The guy was a little bit of a prick anyways, so I won't say he deserved what he got, but I'm not surprised. Now I'll get right into my, well, I guess you call them yes or no's. I call them turbo lift up and down. My turbo lift down moments, that elevator scene. I know we saw it in the preview, but really sneezing on Connolly there. Was this a poke at the Orville? Because that's something you could expect on that show. It's not something I expect on Star Trek Discovery. Now, as far as turbo lift up moments, I love those landing pods. I thought they were really cool and the way they flew around. And I love the fact that finally, in season two, we have a bridge crew. I know they were there before, but they were just background decorations. Now we actually know who the bridge crew is. Thank you, Captain Pike, for getting everybody to give the roll call. Ranks don't matter. We just wanted to know who these people were, and now we do. And I feel like it was a bonding moment. I get to know these people, and now I'm more invested in what it is they do. They're not just background filler. So I really appreciated that. And I hope that Commander Jet Reno sticks around. She was a hoot. I would love to see her stay on Discovery. And who knows, maybe if Stamets does end up leaving, she'll stick around as the chief engineer. He obviously has the smarts, but I'm not 100% convinced that Stamets is going to leave anyways. And finally, the last comment I'm not 100% sure of, and I didn't look up anything that any people were saying, but when Burnham was injured on the asteroid there and she looked up and she saw that angel-like figure and then all of a sudden Pike burst through, was that just the pain causing an hallucination or was there actually something there before Pike showed up? Now, I'm not 100% sure either way, but I'm really, really curious to see if there's something more to this than what we know. So overall, great start to the season. I'm so happy that Star Trek is back on TV. And I can't wait to get listening to regular episodes of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. Thank you so much, the two of you, for what you do. And I'll talk to you again next week. Till then, Mark out.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much, Mark. As usual, you also get... Anyway.
Yep. That's right.
I've said it before, Mark. You always make our... podcast better. So
agreed.
Kudos to you. And I look forward to Tales from the Rocinante whenever the Expanse gets back.
Yes. Saved by Amazon.
Yep. It's funny. There were a couple things that Mark said that reminded me of things that I was going to say, but didn't have in the notes. So he mentioned that with his turbo lift up and turbo lift down, I forgot to mention the turbo lifts. We see that one scene where we see the guts of the Discovery with the elevator, or the, I should say the turbo lift, going in all directions, and we see worker bees in there. And that was unexpected, I'll say. What did you make of that?
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about.
Hmm. Okay. Go back and see when it was around the time just before the guy sneezes on Connolly. There is a brief shot where we see the turbo lift from outside the turbo lift as it's moving. And we see it almost look like a roller coaster. We also see worker bees in there working. So it was a little strange.
Okay. I did not see that at all.
Okay.
Maybe I had my head down and I was writing or something. I don't know.
Probably. It was brief. So it would be one of those things that you could miss. So, and for that matter, with that, it reminded me, bringing that up, reminded me of the, and I don't remember what they were called, but the vehicles that Burnham brings up as a solution.
They call them pods.
Huh?
They called them pods, I thought. Pods? I don't know what their full name was, but I know they said Pods at least once.
They launched in a very elaborate way. Like, it was almost like they were shot out of some kind of corridor or something. Like, it was almost like they went around and around in the saucer section before they actually went out. And then they crossed. It was kind of weird. It seemed like visual effects for visual effects' sake. It could have just released, straight through. So I thought that was a little weird.
Where is this scene with the turbo lift again?
It is when they are coming aboard and they go in the turbo lift, and it's right when just before the Saurian sneezes on Connelly. It's basically when they go into the turbo lift. I'd have to. Do you want to go look?
No, I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
Well, that was kind of interesting. I mean, I remember seeing it, but I didn't really register, I guess, what it was.
It's pretty short.
It was pretty short, but kind of cool, because I've always kind of wondered how the turbo lifts got everywhere, because it didn't really seem like the ship was strictly up and down.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you're talking about artificial gravity.
Yep.
So that was kind of cool.
Also, I wanted to second what you said about Jet Reno.
Yeah, me too.
I'm hoping, she's a chief engineer. It seems like Non is a chief engineer. I wouldn't be surprised if Non goes back to the Enterprise, since it seems like the Enterprise needs a lot of work. So maybe Jet Reno will become the chief engineer. So maybe we'll see.
I don't know. I wanted to say I did not think that Connelly deserved to die. I mean, that's a bit harsh, Brian. Just because you're a douchebag doesn't mean that you deserve death.
Did I say you deserve to die?
You did when...
Ouch.
When Mark said, I don't think he deserved to die, you said, I do. I was like, whoa, that's brutal. Okay. It's like, am I glad that he's not there anymore as a character? Yes, but speaking as a fictional person, I don't think he deserved death.
Okay. Deserve to die might be a little harsh. You're right. But let's just say that of anyone, if anyone's got to die, he had a bit of a target on his head.
Yeah, we're glad it was the douchey character rather than someone we like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
I could go with that. But, let's hold our horses here. There were plenty of characters in season one that deserved to die.
Very true.
Call that.
And Tilly agrees.
That's right. I know she does.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say, too, was that Connelly, he seemed to be pretty threatened by Burnham, don't you think?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't really get why. I mean, she was only expecting Spock in your place. It's not really because she thought Spock would be better, just because she has a familial connection. So calm down, dude.
Indeed. I tend to think that there should be a short track on Connelly.
For real. You're like, it's a metaphor. No, it's a simile, actually. She's right. It is a simile. No, a simile is using like or as. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to think, like, dude, you don't know English? Like, that's a pretty...
That's pretty basic
thing.
Oh, it is pretty basic.
It's
basic.
Yeah, it's something that you learn very, like, at least, I'd say, middle school. Certainly. So
it's a grammar rule in English that is easy and simple to remember, I think. Anyway, I don't know. But
yeah,
not like other things that are a bit harder, like, the difference between adverbs and adjectives and blah, 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 that kind of stuff.
And we have to remember that Ruthie will silently correct your grammar.
I will. I may not say it out loud, but I will be thinking it in my head.
Well, when I make mistakes, she does tell me, but that's okay. I don't like making mistakes. I have a thing about making mistakes. Like, you'll see I know, Ruthie, you'll see this. Like when I type something in Messenger or something, I'll correct myself if I've realized that I've done a typo. It just, I hate it. I hate making mistakes.
Too. I don't like it either. I especially don't like it when, oh, sidebar, there is this game I play and there are a bunch of different people on my team, so to speak. And there is one person in chat who I'm not sure has ever spelled a word correctly ever. And my eye starts twitching when I'm trying to read what is being said. And I
What's the game?
Really have to hold myself back and not say, I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're saying right now, because my brain can correct some spelling errors, but not all of them. I have to have a little bit of context. I just really, my eyes start to glaze over whenever this person starts typing. I just can't. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, moving on.
Anyway, all right. Well, do you have anything else you wanted to bring up from Mark's voicemail?
No, I don't think so. Just that I also really liked whatever her name was, Jet.
Yeah.
Jet Reno. I also hope that she is on multiple episodes. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, well, like I said, I would like to see her as chief engineer. I think it would be great. I think that she would be good with Stamets too, actually. They both have a level of sarcasm that is that would go well together.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this comes to our third and final voicemail for this episode from our Fred.
Our Fred. No one else
our
is Fred.
Our Fred from the Netherlands.
Our Fred.
Yes. I meant to say our friend. Hence, mistake that, yeah. And before I do that, I should have to play.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
Shut up, Blaine.
All right, we're going back on point.
Hello, Brian and Rosie. This is Brad from the NAS with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 1. First off, I shortly want to come back to the short tracks. There was a big, big discussion about the shifts on the Discovery, that there were 5 shifts. And of course, some naval people explained it to us that in the Navy, you have 4 shifts of 5 hours and 1 shift of 4 hours. And you were discussing what would be better, 6 shifts, whatever. And I thought, what the heck? I mean, Earth rotation takes 24 hours. But in the Federation of Planets, there are so many planets would probably have another length of a day. We have star dates. Are they based on 24-hour clock? Whatever. And, well, the other thing is you can divide 24 hours in just pieces of 4 hours and 48 minutes. Why should every shift start at 00? Well, probably because lack of intelligence in some humans, perhaps. And then there were people who were not liking the short tracks because they didn't connect to season 2. How do you know what is coming in season 2? And I mean, I had the idea that the person who came with Captain Pike was of the same race as the one in the first short track, Runaway. Furthermore, Saru's history was already in this first episode back because he referred to his sister there. Okay, the episode Calypso in 1,000 years in the future. Well, you have to see if we get any reference there. And Harry Mudd is always a reference, at least to the past and perhaps even to the future. And on the other hand, I don't think it's much of a problem to have no connection with some previous stuff or some future stuff, because it did get us in the sphere of Star Trek Discovery again. And that's enough. So they can stand alone without any connection, as far as I am concerned. So for this episode, hold your horses. What did I like? To start with, I always like the actress who played Spock's mother, Amanda. Mia Kirshner, who we also know from Defiance. I liked the flashback to Spock's and Michael Burnham's youth. Furthermore, there were some jokes in it, like the guy with the fish head was
having a cold and sneezing and having snot in the face of the other guy. That was a bit, let's say, Orville-like humor. And I really wonder if Star Trek is trying to get a little more of Orville kind of humor into it. Furthermore, I also disliked a bit the hectic ADHD kind of reactions of Tilly and the stuff with the little finger of Pike, and should be funny. A bit overacted, a bit too uncertain. After a whole season of Discovery, I think Ensign Tilly should be much more confident of herself, even after her role shortly as captain in the alternative universe. I had the idea it's a throwback now to playing much younger again and much uncertain and being hectic again. The sideline of Stamets, the B story, C story, or even D story about Stamets was a bit, well, it didn't do much in this episode. It was nice seeing her back, of course, but that was more or less it. I realize I sound quite negative at the moment, but I really have to get used to this new setting, also with Pike, etc., and because I don't understand everything that's happening. So I hope you will clarify that a little bit for me. And as a whole, and graphic effects, etc., was, of course, very nice. And it's very nice to have Star Trek back. I had the idea that Commander Nan, so the woman that got on the Discovery together with Pike, was like Poe Xahian. But Brian posted on the Facebook group that she was Barzan. But if you take Poe without her bluish makeup, the ridges are not so obvious, so prominent as in Barzan. And if you compare Nan then with Poe, I think it's more similar than to the Barzan. But probably you're right, Brian. I trust you. I found the episode in the beginning very slow-paced, and then after they used these capsules, these pods, it got very high-paced. I actually couldn't keep up. And even my wife, who was watching with me, was also complaining, what's happening. So, well, what's happening? You may explain that. That's why I listen to podcasts. To everything that I don't understand, get it nicely explained, and then listen to that on my cycle to and from work so that I can cope with the next episode next week. I give the episode a 6 out of 10 for now, and probably a 7 out of 10 after rewatching, and probably an 8 after rewatching and after listening to your podcast and understanding everything, probably an 8.5. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, thank you so much, Fred.
Yes, and thanks, Fred.
You definitely deserve the Showcase Award, because you've got even more coming. Just end it there. Okay, so I talked to... there was a little more that I put down, but I did talk to Fred this morning, and after getting to watch it again, he definitely did appreciate the episode more, and like he thought, he basically, I think he raised it to an 8, but he also said, and I do agree with him, he said that it's not a good sign for a show to have to rely on a second watch to be able to appreciate it more. So there were times when there was so much going on, and I had asked him, like, what was the source of his confusion? And it had a lot to do with the scene in the asteroid field. He thought that so much was going on, it was hard for him to follow. Another point I wanted to bring up, apparently Kurtzman in interviews last week said that all 4 of the short treks will somehow connect with season 2. Now, that makes me wonder about Calypso. I really wonder how that's going to fit. That's the one that I can't see fitting anywhere, but that also suggests that maybe Harry Mudd is going to be seen. I didn't think he would be, but then again, it could be someone else that was in the episode. I don't know. Or maybe we'll see the USS DeMilo. I don't know. But I don't know how that's going to play out, but apparently they will fit in. And I should mention this, I was going to put this in the news, but if you are watching internationally, the short treks had not been available to you. But if you go under trailers on Netflix, you will find that they are now available to you. They were released on the 17th, so the day before you got to see the episode on Netflix. So that's good. And I do recommend watching them. They're short, well, hence them being called short treks. But also, I would say that they're worth watching. I think pretty much they were all good, some better than others, but they were all interesting. So, and I thought it was interesting how I think every single one of them was our favorite and our least favorite of the six that were on the roundtable. Every episode was a favorite to somebody and the least favorite to someone else. So, I forgot that Mia Kirshner, who was playing Amanda, was on Defiance. I knew that.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I forgot about that. She played the sister.
Yep.
I forget what her character's name was. I know the last name was Rosewater, but yeah, she was the sister of the mayor. So
She ran the Need Want.
Yes, that's right. Yes, she was basically running a bar slash brothel.
Yep.
Yep.
Her name was Kenya.
Kenya. There you go. Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I knew it was Rosewater, but I knew the sister was Amanda Rosewater, but I couldn't remember Kenya. Okay. And I mentioned already, but I do kind of agree with Tilly's ADHD-like behavior. I thought it was slightly overdone, not overacted, just a little too much of it. But I see Ruthie's point about it being probably because she was nervous around Captain Pike, a legend. And I think by the end of the episode, she was much more confident like we expect her, like when she says, it's the power of math, people. Mm. And all of her behavior in trying to get the asteroid. So I thought that was good. What do you think of that, like, Transformers-like artificial gravity thingy?
I don't know.
How it pretty cool. Built out and stuff?
Yeah. Kind of reminded me of, like, a pop-up tent where you have to stand back because it's going to spring.
Yeah, definitely. He also mentioned the fact that, and I put it in the notes here, but that Commander Nan is apparently a Barzan, and I don't think that's official, but she certainly has been recognized as a Barzan. Like, if you look it up in Memory Alpha, you will see that they have her listed as a Barzan. So I don't know if it's officially been mentioned that she's a Barzan. Now, the other thing, too, I wanted to mention, because I thought about this, the Barzans were not members of the Federation. They were not even warp capable. They certainly, you know, knew about warp drive, but they had no capability themselves. They had that wormhole that they were trying to negotiate rights to, if you remember, in the episode The Price. And that's that one with Devanani Rall. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't know who that person is.
Okay. That was the Troy had a relationship with him. In that episode, he was like one quarter Betazoid. And I thought it was kind of funny because the Ferengi that were like really arrogant, and when Geordi and Data were telling them that they need to get back from and, you know, leave and go through the wormhole, they were being arrogant just like Connelly is. So, and of course, they get stranded. And I can't remember if it was Delta or Gamma. I want to say it was Delta Quadrant.
Incorrect.
Hello, this is Brian, and well, it's not exactly incorrect, but it is partially incorrect because I forgot that these Ferengi ended up in the Star Trek Voyager episode False Prophets, and that means, in fact, that they were in the Delta Quadrant, but at the time when I recorded this on Saturday. I forgot about that episode. I am going through a Voyager rewatch right now, but I haven't gotten to that point, so I hadn't thought of it. So anyway, just wanted to self-correct. Back to the episode. But anyway, just kind of funny because Connelly was a lot like them.
Huh. All right.
Ruthie, do you have anything you want to say about Fred's feedback?
Yes, actually. I think Fred made a good point about we are all basing this on an Earth solar day, basically. And I don't know, maybe that's the standard time for the Federation because the Federation is based on Earth, but maybe not. I don't know. So I suppose we could have a 25-hour day just to make it easier. but yeah, it does seem kind of strange, or like it would be rather a pain to way more than just organizing things across a single planet with, you know, day and night and all that stuff, to organize things to try and coordinate, I guess, time across planets. But, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting. What do you think? Do you think they have decided that an Earth solar day is the time that they all work with, I guess, or whatever?
Well, we do recall on DS9 that they went through a 26-hour day.
Mm.
So I don't know.
They just adjust based on where they are, and if they're on a starship, they go by...
That would be kind of confusing, though, wouldn't it?
Day. Well, I mean, yeah.
Like, there'd be so many questions there. I mean, like, how many hours are in a Vulcan day, or, you know, any of the other species? I don't know. And, you know, is an hour an hour?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we do, you know, base all of our time on the sun, so.
Yeah. And for that matter, like, that kind of negates any other measurements of time on other species, because you know darn well that they had some measurement of time, and it probably wasn't minutes, hours, and seconds. It might have been, oh, I don't know, something based on decimals. It's always been a crazy thing. Our time system is kind of weird in that it's not metric.
It's solar based, though.
It is. Yeah, it is.
The sun isn't just metric.
Right. Well, I just mean that they could have come up with hours, minutes, and seconds that were, you know, base 10, or, you know, like base 1,000. So you would have 1,000 seconds in a minute and 1,000 minutes in an hour or something. Who knows? I'm just talking out of my butt.
Okay. But I would like to know how this system would work based on the sun, but
I don't know. As I just said, talking out of butt. Anyway.
I mean, having it based on the sun seems like a logical thing to me, because it does kind of dictate the day and night and seasons, years.
It absolutely does. I just mean that it's not divisible by 10. The hours, minutes, and seconds.
Tell the sun that.
I know. It's not exactly. Okay, my argument is completely falling apart now that I think about it more. It's like, okay, it's just not going to work. It revolves around the Earth, or revolves around the sun, it does 365 revolutions a year. Okay.
That's 365.4, I think.
Yeah. Yes, I know. I was just trying to say that. 365.2425 something, something, something. Anyway.
Every 4 years, we get an extra day.
Yes, we do.
It's very complicated.
And then once out of 100 years, we don't.
I know. It's so complicated.
But then once out of 400 years, we do. So it's I've looked at that. It's leap years are difficult to figure out, because we get them, but we don't always get them. But we think we get them because we've never seen that we don't. So.
I don't think we had a leap year in the year 2000. Normally it's like.
No, we did. But we won't have one in 2100.
we did have it in for in 2000?
We did, yes.
I feel like there was a leap year in my lifetime where we did not have an extra day, and that's how this whole discussion or whatever became known. Or well, the whole discussion leap year thing became known. I don't know. Because all of the news channels were like, well, why aren't we having a leap year this year, Bob? Or whoever they were talking to that was their special correspondent person for that or whatever. I don't know.
And to that, I have to say,
what is this bizarre segue that's happening? Can we maybe stay on point?
No, because I have one thing to say here. So it says, yes, I got this from looking up. Yes, 2000 was a leap year since 1752. A year is exactly divisible by 100 are only leap years when they are also exactly divisible by 400. So the year 1800 and 1900 were not leap years. Neither will 2100 or 2200 be leap years. And I guess 2300.
So that must have been it then. They must have been talking about that.
Yeah. Something. And why they say since 1752, that's when we switched from the...
Right. That's when they standardized that whole thing.
Yeah. We switched calendars.
They realized, hey, man, March is coming really early this year. Anyway.
Yeah, we were on the Julian calendar before. Now we're on the Gregorian calendar.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the reason why everything starts at 00 is because it's easier, Fred.
Yeah.
So we don't always want to have to use our brain. Shortcuts
otherwise,
are helpful.
Otherwise, it'd be like an off by one. I know. So.
Shortcuts are helpful.
Do you have anything else you want to bring up about his feedback?
No, I think I took that on a tangent well enough.
Oh, but that's why people listen. All right. Do you want to give Mark's feedback?
Okay. We have another Mark. Mark said, I noticed that the Enterprise is so advanced that they finally solved the lens flare everywhere issue. I especially like the 60s TV lighting across Michael's eyes as she walked into Spock's quarters. The updated yet still retro styling was a nice touch.
Yes, it was.
I agree.
Yeah. So it was a minor, or sorry, a subtle homage to the lighting of the original series. And I noticed like the colorful. Do you notice the colorful corridors?
I did.
And that in the Enterprise? I mean, how could you not?
They did kind of make that obvious when they went first standing in front of it. It was like, oh! It's like, bonk, and hit you over the head with it. All right, I got it. Thanks.
Yep. All right. We got feedback via the feedback form at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback from Rick from Cleveland. So... he said, I watched this episode twice, back to back last night, and loved it. The singular thing that struck me is that they used the same young actress to play young Michael that they used in season one. So the girl was a year older, playing the character a couple of years younger. Yeah, I'll just stop there. And yeah, I noticed that too. And it was a little off-putting because she was obviously older, but I kind of just... like the fact that they use the same actress. So, I don't know. What did you notice that?
I mean, I kind of noticed that she didn't really look too much like Sonequa Martin-Green. I felt like maybe it was more noticeable because she's older.
Yeah, I have to admit, I noticed that as well.
But I don't recall thinking that from season one. So maybe it's just because she has aged a little bit. Now she doesn't really look like... Sonequa anymore, but
it could be.
I don't know.
Rick continues. He says, this also made her appear older than Spock, which may be fine, but I had not expected. And I'll just say, stop there and say, they kind of have indicated that Burnham is older than Spock in several of the things. They mentioned it in season one as well. So I don't know how much of an age difference there is. It can't be like a lot, but if you remember in Lethe, he hadn't attended the Science Academy yet. So that's why it was kind of tragic. Sarek's decision to allow Spock to go to the Vulcan Expeditionary Group versus Burnham. So, because Spock ended up obviously going through Starfleet And I wonder how that's going to play out. How much did Burnham have a hand in that? It'd be interesting to know. I'm sure we're going to find out as the season goes on. Continues, Spock did appear very young relative to Michael, prompting the thought, baby Spock, do-do-do-do, baby Spock. Do you understand that reference? Because I don't. I have to
admit. I don't have any idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I was hoping you did.
Which is now stuck in your head, too.
But ha-ha, it's not, because we have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, Rick, I'm sorry, but it went right over our heads. So you can write in and let us know what song you're talking about. But anyway, I'm sure someone will respond and we'll feel dumb.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm used to it.
Yeah, we like feeling dumb. It makes us, we can't get all full of ourselves that way. That said, I loved everything about this episode. Anson Mount's Chris Pike is a wonderful addition to the show, a complete opposite of Lorca.
Yeah.
He is, definitely. I enjoyed how he goes out of his way to show respect to every crew member, even the awkward way Saru and Burnham seem to conflict with him. Saru was a hoot in this episode. The bit with he and Burnham talking about her anxiety in the corridor was great, and the comedic use of his threat ganglia was fun. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Tilly, as always, is just a delight and rounded out the episode perfectly with the Pike's pinky and the power of math. Beyond that, her relationships and genuine bond with the rest of the crew really grounds the show and adds to a positive vibe we did not always have in season one. I'm just going to stop there for a second. You know what? Totally agree with you there 100%. And I loved what Stamets said about her, how she's going to be an excellent captain someday because she rules, you know, with love. And that is so evident in Tilly. Like she's the heart and soul of the Discovery, I think. And any over ADHD, ooh, squirrel. References to this episode, you know, I cannot imagine this show without her. I think she's a crowning jewel in Star Trek, and anyone who doesn't give this show a chance is really missing out for anything else other than Tilly. Like, Tilly makes the show in a lot of ways. She's great.
Yep, I agree.
She's so anti Wesley Crusher, it's not even funny.
Oh man,
because she's brilliant, but at the same time, you know, she's awkward, and you know, she's everything that Wesley Crusher should have been. I think I
have no problems with Wesley.
I don't either. And you know, worth saying that I know Wes, you were named after Wesley Crusher, so give you a kudos there. It was great to see a bit more from the rest of the bridge crew, especially Detmer and Awashikun, whose interactions were just great. Yeah, they were.
She's like, we're going to do this, right, girls? And they look at each other like, sure. A little nonverbal communication of, yeah, we got this.
I can't wait for more of them. And yeah, even Irium. We actually see Irium outside of the bridge. I think the only time I remember seeing her outside of the bridge was in What's Past as prologue when they're talking about how they get back home, you know, and that was just before the great speech that Saru gives about not accepting a no-win scenario. We are Starfleet, all of that.
Yeah.
In many ways, may have been the best scene of season one, certainly of Saru's. Anyway, he says, I can't wait for more of them. Connolly, he was annoying. How did Pike put up with his arrogance? Indeed. Non, seems interesting, but I really want to see number one. I do too. And I know we will because we've seen her in trailers. My favorite addition to the crew may be Reno, who seems to be McCoy, Scotty, and a bit of Chief O'Brien rolled into one. That's a great analogy.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up on the Cage reference in the fortune Pike found in the Ready Room and wonder if this takes place before or after the Enterprise trip to Talos IV. To that, I'll say that Talos IV, that was supposed to be in 2254, and this, I believe we are into 2257 or 2258 at this point. So overall, I'm excited to see what is next, not just for the overall story of the season, but for these characters themselves. The relationship between Stamets and Culber and the choices he has made and may change around what to do next. What happened between Burnham and Spock? Was Spock really the little jerk we saw in their whole childhood? I actually find myself disappointed that there is no after Trek to start exploring some of these ideas this season. More than any episode last season, this felt like Star Trek to me. I cannot wait to see what's next. I leave you with this. Baby Spock, doot-to-do, doot-to-do, again. Totally lost.
Oh, gosh.
Well, you didn't give us any audio, but I have to say, for the amount of detail in your feedback, I give you the Showcase Award, too. That's four. I'll just give you a short one. But thank you so much, Rick. Really appreciate it. Do you have anything to say about Rick's feedback?
No, I think.
We kind of commented as we went, so.
Yeah. We sidebarred.
All right. Next is from Wes. You want to read that one?
All right. Wes says, holy crap, what a roller coaster ride. It was worth the wait. When you say this, be sure to pause the last three words. Did I do that right?
Yeah. I'm wondering if it could be done like Chris Berman on ESPN, or it could be like Spock. Or sorry, like Spock, like Kirk. It was worth the wait. Spock, what are you doing? Anyway.
Oh, man. Anyway. Oh, in case anyone cared to know, Brother is the second longest season premiere in Star Trek history, behind only The Way of the Warrior from Deep Space Nine.
Now, what about like Emissary or Caretaker? Or probably Broken Bow, I think. Wouldn't those also be considered season premieres? I guess maybe he means a non-pilot. That's probably what he means, a non-pilot. Yeah, because The Way of the Warrior, which was like, what, season four of DS9, that was a non-pilot. So that's probably what he meant.
Sure, I guess. The Way of the Warrior was such a great episode, though.
It was.
I mean, I just, oh, so good.
All right. Well, next is James Robbins. He says, good episode, nothing spectacular, but it had everything it needed for a one-hour premiere. A small build of the relationships in Spock's family, a little action, Tilly being Tilly, and an intro to some new characters. All in all, this was a great start to the new season. It really put checks in all the right boxes to get us prepared for this adventure without trying too hard, which is something I think they kind of did with the season one premiere in trying to make it like a blockbuster movie. Can't wait for next week. Another thing is this episode, it was visibly stunning. I can't wait to see Fred from the Netherlands screen grabs this week. I'm sure he'll have a few. Yes, he does have a few, actually. He sent us in some. They need to make next Thursday get here quicker. Yeah, I mean, I was waiting on bated breath this episode. So, I'm very happy to be doing the podcast with Ruthie for the next, 14 weeks. So,
yay.
It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yes, indeedy.
All right. Next.
All right. Martin says, OMG, that was an amazing season opener. Wow. It felt like a movie with its action and intense edge of seat moments.
It did. It's funny. And going back to what James said in this feedback, but it fits with Martin as well. I watched a video from Trek Yard's YouTube channel, and they were saying that they felt like this episode should have been the pilot for season one, that it would have felt a lot more like Star Trek to people. And, you know, I would have to agree. I think that those first two episodes were so disjointed from the rest of the season. You know, we don't even see the Discovery in the first two episodes. You know, it's a different captain and all that. It was so standalone. You know, it was almost like it was a TV movie prior to a series starting. And I think this very much more felt like the series itself, even though I could definitely tell that it was a season two, because there were certain things about it that felt different, that felt like they dialed some things up and some other things down. So,
yep.
All right. Well, we got a few pieces of feedback from Twitter this time around.
Yay, Twitter.
Thank you for doing that. You can reach us at Star Trek GSM on Twitter. From Todd Schwartzberg, who we usually get his feedback from Facebook, but he sent us in feedback from Twitter. So I'd like to encourage other people to do the same. He says, looking forward to tonight's episode. In the meantime, on the Orville, there was also a character by the name of Tyler, which was just revealed to have certain similarities story-wise to Star Trek Discovery's Tyler / Vok. I thought that was interesting. Yeah, kind of funny. Also, I noticed that Shahzad Latif is no longer in the main credits. We know he's going to be back, but he's not in the main credits. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Then he says, I was going to say it's going to be nice having a Captain Pike that doesn't need to communicate in a series of beeps. What was that?
Sorry. It's an alarm on my phone.
You couldn't have timed that better.
I know. That was funny.
And then he says, and then Disco and Enterprise switch to Morse code, a series of dots and dashes. Coincidence? Foreshadowing?
Who knows?
Gotta use that. Anyway. Then he continues, he says, awesome episode. I still love Tilly. Enjoyed snarky Saru about his ganglia. No one should be surprised. Yeah, what was with that dude that, like, I didn't recognize who that bridge officer was.
But I know.
Was he new or something? Because
he's probably just one of those people that comes on when the bridge officers go off planet or off ship to do the away team stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't say that very well.
Well, I think we knew what you meant. He continues. He says, I really loved how Pike just melded with the team, and everything about the rescue of 815 was amazing. The Hiawatha, he means. Can we talk about a scene in the preview for season two? And to that, I told him yes, but we'll cover it at the end of the episodes. So there's a little more from Todd that we'll talk about later.
Awesome.
All right, next.
All righty. Ken from Chicago says, Star Trek Discovery Season 2 debut was great. This is the Star Trek I was looking for. Burnham, Saru, Tilly, the crew, and Pike plus Sarek got to be written Vulcan, but not a jerk. Bonus at Tignataro, the body is a machine, and I can read. Engineering for the win. Ha, ha,
yeah,
ha.
That was good,
that
actually.
That was awesome. I was like, well, she's right. You know, the body really is just a highly advanced machine.
You know what it reminded me of, too, was Stamets' expression of biology is physics.
Yeah.
So, very compatible. That's why I think that they'll be good together.
Simpatico. Okay. He's got some hashtags in there. I was a hashtag engineering FDW, hashtag Star Trek Discovery S2 debut was awesome. Anson Mount was an expectedly great addition. I saw him in hashtag Hell on Wheels. Tig was an unexpectedly great addition. I hadn't seen her work before. Really? Oh,
I hadn't either.
Oh, I probably haven't. Okay, I looked her up on IMDb and she's been in some stuff I've seen. I haven't really noticed her necessarily. However, I did remember her from Instant Family and she was hilarious in that. It was a really great movie. Also, anyone who's listening should go watch it. It's good. Anyway, and then returning team members knocked it out of the park. Hashtag Short Treks references were cool.
All right, so that is it for our feedback from listeners. Ruthie, do you have anything you wanted to bring up?
I feel like we talked a little bit about the pod things, but did they explain them any more or better? And I just didn't get it. Like, what is their purpose? Why are they there?
Burnham said, yeah, I don't know why they're there. The only thing I can figure is maybe they were given to Discovery because Discovery's a newer ship and Enterprise didn't have those because it's, you know, been around for, I don't know, 17, 18 years at the time of this. But the one thing to say with that is Burnham mentioned that they were used on some world or something that had some strange gravity or something like that. I don't remember the world, but that's what she said. But beyond that, it wasn't really explained. So, I mean, to me, and you could say that this is probably where most of the budget for the episode went to. And you could although it was visually stunning, we could have developed the story without this, I think, or maybe done a little cheaper. But I'm not going to criticize it because I thought it was beautiful. But I did see, particularly on Trek Yards, one of the guys on there had made that point that it was a little unnecessary. And to that, I would agree. It didn't need to do this, but I liked it for sure.
That and, you know, I said this before, all the other things that are new and different just make me apprehensive because, I don't know, I'm just like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
I understand that you can't necessarily know everything about what has already been shown or whatever. Like, there's... Certainly, we don't know everything about the Star Trek universe and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I feel like sometimes they just throw new stuff in there just because they want to throw new stuff in there. Like, why don't we ever see any of this kind of stuff in the future that is our past? So,
yeah,
that's the problem with this kind of stuff, is that they want to create new things, but you set yourself up for failure that way by doing this. And whoever sold them on that idea should be flogged with a wet noodle.
Well, the one thing that I'm thinking of with that in mind is the two-part episode from DS9, Past Tense, which, you know, had the, what were they called? The districts. It was, I can't remember specifically what they were called, but you know, you had these districts for people that were homeless and without jobs and stuff like that. And the technology that we see in that episode is, I would say, far behind what we have today. And that was supposed to take place in 2024. And we're 5 years before that in 2019. And we are already far exceed that. So I will bring up this theory that has been brought up. It's not mine, but I have heard it brought up before. And that is that Star Trek is actually a telling of historical documents. And supposedly it's like it's telling of future history. So the 60s were telling Star Trek from the 23rd century in ways that they could in 1966 to 1969. And if you look at it from that crazy perspective, it all makes sense. Of course, none of that makes sense at all. Future history. We're talking about future history. Anyway, so I don't know. But the point that you made, and the point that I think Ken from Chicago made earlier about it, it could have all been in the future. Can't argue with that at all. And if they just move forward, this all goes away. But I don't know. It's like I say, like, I've kind of reached a point where I'm okay with it because I love the show so much that all of that makes sense to me, but I'm not letting it affect my love of the show. That's where I'm at. I don't agree with the decisions, all of the decisions made, but that said, I have a wonderful show and I wouldn't, you can't take it away from me at this point. Don't try. So
that's funny.
What else do you got?
Nothing really. I think we pretty much covered everything I may have needed to say.
Okay. I wanted to highlight this. I think she's reciting a quote, and that's from the cold open when Burnham says, "And hidden there, a secret buried among the eternal stars, was a message, an enormous letter in a bottle made of space and time, visible only to those whose hearts were open enough to receive it." And to me, that explains what I just said a minute ago. Those who hate the show, I think, are not open enough to receive how good it is. Mm. So, yeah. You know,
yeah.
To me, that's what it spoke to. I thought Detmer's eyepiece looked a little different from last season. I have to go and look and do compare, but it seemed a little different. The roll call, speaking of a little different, the only one to give her rank on that, because Pike specifically said don't mention rank, was Lieutenant Commander Arium. And I did not realize this. I have to look it up in the credits, but I actually found this from Twitter that Sarah Minich, who played Arium in season one, she has been replaced by Hannah Cheeseman. Hmm. And I guess her makeup is so
extensive
that you can't really tell. But
I guess clearly.
Yeah. But apparently, yeah, it's a different actress playing Arium this time. Because like if you look at Hannah Cheeseman's Twitter account, it says that she's playing Arium 2.0. So I don't know. Maybe Arium's going to get like a visual change coming and won't look so alien. There are references to her as an augmented human, not alien, but human. Hmm. So I really want to know what the deal is with her. I've wanted to know anyway, but now I want to know more.
Yeah. And what's with Detmer's eye thing? What is that?
Who knows?
See, these are the things I'm talking about. Stuff that we haven't really seen before, but they don't really address it.
Yeah.
Like, I especially noticed that when they were doing the bridge thing, because I'm like, what's up with that person? And what's up with that person?
Yeah.
Like, and it just reminded me of when they create all these, I think, I don't know. I did enjoy Enterprise. I liked it. But they did a lot of things wrong. And again, prequel problems.
Yep.
You can't introduce new species that no one in the future has ever seen before.
Yes.
Because that's a problem. We're like, what happened to them? Did they go extinct?
Yep.
No one ever mentions it. Yeah. But, you know, why don't you talk, like, bring up species or races or whatever that people do mention? Or even if it was just a little passing reference, that would be enough, because you could point to it and say, ha ha, there. And then all the little nerds would go, ooh.
Yeah, when are we going to see some Denobulans? Like, that was a species that we didn't know about that, you know, suddenly is prominent in the founding of the Federation. And, you know, Phlox is a Denobulan doctor on Enterprise. And, you know, it's like, we didn't know about Denobulans before that. And we haven't seen them since. So where the heck are they?
That's what I'm talking about. Just like that.
Yeah.
Irritates me.
Yep.
And, you know, I get the whole revisionist, revising technology and all that kind of stuff. I have no problem with that. I get it. Nobody wants to see a show set in the 60s.
Yeah, we don't. Well, but you know, Star Trek continues.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, Ruthie, watch it. It's great. I wouldn't even say it's good. It's great. It's like it hits all of the notes that the original series does. It's professionally acted. These aren't fan actors. Well, they're fans that are acting. They're actors that are fans, and they've done a great job with it. And I love it for what it is. But it's largely appealing to those of us that grew up with the original series. And if you didn't, you know, you might look at it and go, well, what's with the, oh, isn't that cute or isn't that campy? But anyway, I don't think CBS could make a show that looked like that.
Well, they couldn't. They would never get anyone to watch it. But, and that's exactly not my problem necessarily. I do feel like when they show certain types of things like this pod thing, like no one ever uses that again. What happened? I mean, what happened to it? Same thing with the spore drive. What's it with the spore drive thing? What happened to the spore drive? No one in the future uses it. So are you going to tell us eventually why no one in the future uses it or what? I mean,
why didn't you send it to Janeway?
Yeah, exactly. That kind of stuff.
You know,
why doesn't she know how to build one at least? You know what I'm saying? At the very least.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if I get stranded and I have this knowledge in the past, even though it might be difficult to achieve, it could still be something that you could try to do or make, but they don't. So right, why would they not do that? Those are the right questions that I feel like they stress me out a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about I can't just relax and watch the show because I'm stressed. Because I'm like, why? What? Yeah. And that's what I do.
And this is why I love doing podcasts with you. Always entertaining and thought-provoking. And hopefully you guys like it too. But the point that I would make, you made me think about this. To me, you don't say, well, we've got this thing from, you know, the 23rd century called the spore drive that could get you home in an instant. But we can't send it to you because it requires a pilot to inject themselves with tardigrade DNA, and that's against the eugenics, you know, whatever. I mean, come on. To me, it would be under extreme measures, you know, they would do this, or, you know, they would come up with a hologram method of, you know, or have someone within the holodeck be able to do this and not – they'd find a way is what I'm trying to say. They would find a way.
Yeah.
So, yes, I agree. To me, at the end of season two, they have to permanently scuttle the spore drive.
Yeah.
And if they don't do that, more than anything else that you've said, to me, the spore drive is the one thing that they need to resolve. I completely 100% agree with you that that's the thing that it's like, I can deal with the Klingon makeup.
I get
okay. But I can't help but think of poor Voyager stranded for 70,000 light years from home because they won't give him the spore drive.
Right. Yeah. Or because it's so Section 31 or whatever that they can't.
Yes. And you know something else they're going to have to explain, because this is coming. Okay. We know Section 31 is coming, and we'll get to Section 31 in a minute, but people seem to know what Section 31 is in this timeline, and by the time it gets to Sisko, nobody does. Uh-huh. So at some point, either in this series or something we're going to talk about in a minute, they are going to have to explain how people forget that there is a Section 31. So Anyway, the only other thing I wanted to bring up is what's up with the missing notes of Burnham and Spock that Sarek brings up. And I liked how he referenced that, missing notes. And he didn't push. You have to think at some point that maybe at the end of the season he's going to have that conversation with Burnham. But I liked how that was written. It was referenced in a way that I didn't expect, but fit. But it also makes me wonder, I wonder what happened. I know we're going to see it. They have to. But I just wonder. So,
mm-hmm.
I think I already asked that question earlier. So let's move on. We've got some news to cover. We'll cover it fairly quickly. So let's move to ship-wide announcement. All right. Well, the first thing is that it came up after we had recorded the roundtable, and I inserted it into the roundtable episode, but the Section 31 series with Philippa Georgiou has been greenlighted. It is a go. And so Michelle Yeoh, we know, is going to be back in this season, but apparently there is going to be the first Star Trek Discovery spinoff with Georgiou. And it's going to be, of course, the former Emperor Georgiou from the Mirror Universe being an agent in the Section 31. And there's no talk about when it's going to debut. I'm assuming it's going to be like sometime next year, maybe late next year. So late 2020. But what do you think? What do you think about that?
I mean, I think it'll be interesting. But at this point in time, I feel like the more they pile on with the prequel stuff, the more they are just setting themselves up for disaster.
Yeah,
I get really, that. Really feel like they should have just said, oh, this is another timeline spinoff. That way, redoing all of this stuff, and they can just point to that. Oh, spinoff, timeline branch, whatever thing, in the same way that the Kelvin Universe movies do. Which to me was a brilliant thing, because any little difference or inconsistency, you can just point to, oh, Kelvin timeline. But I guess the movies are pretty much dead now, so whatever.
And that is the next thing to bring up. But I'll just say that I think it'd be kind of cool. I wonder if it would be like a serial versus like an episodic. Because to me, if it's like a spy series, essentially, I could see it being more episodic than anything we have so far. Like, okay, so this episode, Georgiou has to grab the sacred chalice of Reeks from Beta Z for whatever reason.
Yeah, you can't really have a reset every episode if you're doing a spy type of series.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But it makes me think like Mission Impossible type thing. It just depends on how it's going to be done. I don't know.
I think that's it always depends. Just depends.
Yeah. Well, that's true about everything, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Bo Young Kim and Erica Lippold, who are I know the writing partners, they are supposedly creating the show. I don't know if they're show running. I know that if they are, that's a huge promotion, because they were executive story editors last season. I think this season for Discovery, they're listed as co-producers. So if they're suddenly showrunners, holy cow, that's a big step up. Mm. But I know that they're involved in the creation of the show. So in any case, they have a big role. And there isn't a lot of news beyond that, other than the fact that Michelle Yeoh is going to be starring in it. So I guess she won't be dying this season of Discovery. I mentioned already the short treks are available for Netflix viewers, so make sure you check them out. Did you notice the differences in the new theme?
I did not. You said something about differences, and I was like, what?
There's an article that I will put in the show notes about it, but specifically, there's a communicator that kind of vaporizes away in season one that is replaced with the captain's chair. We see a chevron or whatever you call the Federation or the Starfleet symbol, is a Section 31. We see that appear. We see a transporter with three of the science command and engineering slash security, whatever, the three colors basically represented, and on a transporter, and it shows, I think it says invented by Emery Erickson. And I don't know if you remember that, but that was the character that we see on Enterprise that invented the transporter. So I thought that was really cool. And the, when I first saw it, I thought, what's that? Like, it was actually big enough that I noticed it. I thought maybe they put, it was like a typo or some error where they took someone's illustration and they put it into the show. But no, it was the blueprint and it was intentionally there. So I thought that was really cool. And what else? I think that's it. And anyway, I thought it was pretty cool otherwise. I'm curious about some of the people that aren't in the starring list, like Laurel, like, you know, Mary Chifo and Shahzad Latif. Mm-hmm. If Michelle Yeoh will come back as a special guest star when she appears. And I really am very curious about Wilson Cruz's role and how that's going to fit in. Do they somehow make him alive again? You know, who knows?
I don't know.
And I mentioned this on our last episode about the after or the short treks. After Trek is actually does have a replacement. They're essentially replacing it with live shows that will appear on the Star Trek Discovery Facebook page. So they had the first one was a red carpet of the premiere, and it actually started like at 7 p.m. Eastern. I would just say, if people thought that Matt Myra was annoying, they should see the guy that ran that red carpet.
Oh, no.
And tell me after that that Matt Myra is annoying, because I'm sorry, but he took annoying to a new level.
Oh, no. Oh, well.
So, but it was a red carpet, so I don't think that it will, you know, appear. He was, you know, that combination of geek and funny that is so forced that it's not funny.
That's too bad.
Yeah. And already kind of mentioned, but Star Trek IV appears to be shelved, as they say.
It's unfortunate.
S.J. Clarkson, yeah, is now going to be directing the pilot of the Game of Thrones prequel, which I can't wait to see. Of course, I can't wait to see season 8.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. And anyway, so she's on to that. So it is considered shelved. Now, that doesn't mean that it's canceled, but it's not looking good for this movie because they need Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth, and they now need to find a new director. So it still may happen. The Tarantino film is not affected by this, apparently, but that is still in development right now. I don't even think it has a script yet. So anyway, I'm sure there are other pieces of news, but I think that's it for now. That's all I'm going to cover. So,
alrighty.
All right. So to submit your feedback, Ruthie, why don't you take this part so that I can rest my
Oh, I've been talking a long time. All right. To submit your theories and feedback, please go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text, audio, or you can use the speech pipe, the speak pipe widget.
Not so easy, is it?
You can call us at 304-837-2278. You can reach us at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com, or you can put up a Facebook post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. Our Twitter is at StarTrekGSM. So give us feedback there. Also share, retweet, especially when we post the new episode. And we are also on the TV Time app, so you can leave us feedback there by commenting on the post.
Yeah, we haven't been showing up on the short treks for there, but maybe that'll change. I don't know, but we should appear when this comes out on TV Time. So to support us, a great way is by, if you especially use Apple Podcasts, subscribing to us. in whatever podcast client is of your choice. But on Apple Podcasts, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. That will give you a list of all of the shows within the Golden Spiral Media Network. If you do subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, you could really help us out by giving us a rating and especially a review. If you do, we will thank you tremendously on this podcast. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, if your podcast client of choice allows you to rate and review, please do so there. Like I know Stitcher does and does Podcast Republic, but I don't know of any other places that do. Like, for example, Pocket Casts, which I use, there is no rating or review section. Other ways to support the network can be found at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. We don't have a Patreon. Maybe we will someday. We'll talk about it. Other places we can be heard. I was on, let's see, I've been on a couple of places, actually. Been on Wes Huntington's Minnesota Star Trek Nerd podcast. I was on Portal 47 a couple of times, and that you have to be a member of the Portal 47 network or whatever, sign up for that. But I've been on there a couple of times if you are. And also, I'm hoping to be on a couple of other shows soon. So once I know about them, I will let you know. But of course, the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm with my former co-host of that, Ruthie, here, but I'm still doing it.
Because you can't escape.
It's going to be a... What's that?
Because you can't escape.
Well, the thing is that... Here's the thing. It's like this year especially, we're running right into this, like, because it's going to go as of, like, the first 3 weeks where I'm, you know, just going to be hosting on this show. And I have to admit, this is where my heart is now. But then Walking Dead starts on the 10th of February. And then we can suspect that after 8 episodes of that, then Fear the Walking Dead will come up. That both those shows air on Sunday night, but I'm trying to avoid it so that I'm not podcasting 7 days a week. So we are trying to figure that out. I'm probably not going to be editing that show. Thankfully, that'll help. But I don't know. We may edit this show less, so we'll see. But especially this one, this is a long one. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
It sure is. My butt's getting sore.
Yeah. Anyway, getting to the end here. The next episode, season 2, episode 2, is titled New Eden. I saw that mentioned. I don't know where it comes from, but I've heard that reported at a few different sources. Beyond that, I don't think any other episodes of titles have been named. We don't know who's written it, but we do know that it is directed by our revered director of Star Trek and, of course, our commander, William T. Riker, Jonathan Frakes, and, of course, Tom Riker. We can't forget about him. We don't have a description. So, and here is Todd's extra comment. He says, okay, well, I just wanted to say about that preview scene. Was that Spock kissing Michael? Because that brings up so many questions. Was I mistaken? Was that actually Michael and Tyler? Because that would make more sense. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. Hashtag Star Trek Discovery, hashtag feedback. And to that, I have to say that was Tyler that was kissing Michael, not Spock. So just mentioning it here in case you didn't want to talk about the scene. Anyway, with that, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And it's so nice to be back. Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.